to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, January 2nd, 2022, by the Reverend Eric Williams. Today we celebrate the second Sunday of Christmas, the continuation of the Christmas story, which we began on Christmas Eve. And today we get what I think of as the dark side of Christmas. Christmas, for most of us, is a time full of warmth and tenderness. As we meditate on the birth of the baby Jesus, we have the beautiful creche scene. A little bit of a preview. This coming week, we're having a YouTube Epiphany service featuring a slideshow of creche scenes, nativity scenes from our members. So if you sent one in, it'll be in a slideshow, and that'll be part of the service. And they're all tender and lovely, and they bring about these warm, wonderful feelings. Christmas is a time of joy. We sing carols of joy. But then every once in a while, even in the carols, we get this discordant note about the death of little children, the wickedness of King Herod, who, having learned from his advisors and from the magi of the birth of Jesus, this new king of Israel, was threatened and decided to react in the most horrific way possible by assassinating, having his soldiers kill every male child in that area under the age of two. That's the dark side of Christmas, that God would come to earth to be born in human flesh and be greeted with darkness, with violence, and with hatred. That's often, unfortunately, still what the world feels like, doesn't it? We still live in a time when there's a lot of darkness. We struggle with this pandemic, which never seems to end. 2 years, and now it seems as bad as it ever has throughout this entire time. We look at acts of random violence in our world, and our hearts are darkened. How can we celebrate Christmas? How can we feel the joy of the new year in the midst of this darkness? We have in the Christmas story wonderful moments of hope and perseverance and this sense of courage in the story that I want us to focus on. Think of how Jesus' early life was. I was really struck by that this year as I read these lessons, that Jesus was born in a town in Bethlehem where his parents were essentially homeless. Because of the census, they'd had to travel to Bethlehem, couldn't find room. And so they ended up in a stable, most likely in a cave in Bethlehem with the animals for company. Not the most stress-free birth experience for Mary. I mean, we look at her, she always seems so beatific, doesn't she, in all the pictures? But I imagine there was a lot of stress for her and Joseph as they tried to create a safe place for their new child. And then Herod's act of violence sent them into exile. Joseph, being warned in a dream, brought his family to Egypt. There's some wonderful echoes of the book of Genesis here. Remember another Joseph who also went to Egypt, who had been sold into slavery by his brothers and ended up as a prince of Egypt. Joseph, who also received dreams and the power to interpret dreams, and who eventually was the agent of the salvation of the people of Israel while they dwelt in Egypt before they were led by Moses into Canaan, into the Promised Land. Now, this latter day, Joseph brings his family back to Egypt to escape from Herod, and they stay there for years, for years. So Jesus' early childhood, up to probably his early adolescence even, was spent in a foreign land of Egypt, in hiding, in exile, a refugee. and then back to Israel after the death of Herod, but not to the home they had once had. Now they had to move to a new land, a new town of Nazareth in Galilee, because Herod's son was still on the throne. So not a happy, stress-free childhood, but one marked by danger and stress and anxiety. And I think that's so important for us to hold on to, because God does not come to us only when our lives are perfect, right? We don't have to be in a state of calm perfection to receive the gift of God's salvation. It is exactly when we are in stress, in darkness, in danger, that God's salvation comes to us. So as we look at our world today, with all of its darkness, it is precisely now when we are able to receive and need to receive this message of hope and faith and love and joy. One of the icons for me of this kind of faith, light in the midst of darkness, hope in the midst of despair, perseverance in the midst of oppression, is the great, probably living saint that we came to know over the past generation, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who died just over a week ago. Desmond Tutu, who was the first black Archbishop of Cape Town in South Africa, received tremendous hate because of that. Many of his parishioners in that diocese were appalled that a black South African would be made the Archbishop, who persevered through all of the evils of apartheid, who was an unshakable agent of faith and hope in the darkest of times, who wrote and preached and lived a life of great perseverance in the midst of darkness. One of his greatest achievements came at the end of apartheid, when Nelson Mandela had become president of the new South Africa. He knew that for South Africa to survive, they had to avoid some of the terrible chaos that other African nations had endured after the end of white rule. There had been lots of, you know, violent reprisals against whites in some African countries, and Mandela wanted to chart a course of reconciliation. Tutu reflected on Mandela. He said when he went into prison in 1962, he was an angry young man, a leader of the African National Congress, and there was great fear on the part of the Afrikaners when he came out of prison, but when he came out, he was a different man. He was preaching and living reconciliation. And so he appointed Desmond Tutu, the Archbishop, to lead what they called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. While not perfect, it was an attempt to try to rebuild relationships between white and black South Africans through painful, painstaking truth-telling, stories of suffering, stories that were shared and offered up, along with the opportunity for forgiveness and reconciliation. It's a kind of justice, not retributive justice, but restorative justice, trying to bring about a new relationship after a time of terrible brokenness. South Africa is not perfect. That project didn't lead to everyone being happy, but it was an incredible statement of faith and hope for the future, and where it succeeded, it did because, in part, of the zeal and holiness of Desmond Tutu. Desmond Tutu reminds us that we don't have the luxury of despair. As Christians, we look to a God who intervenes in the darkness of our world by sending the light of the gospel, the light of Jesus Christ, born in Bethlehem, growing up in Egypt in exile, a refugee, coming back to Galilee and living his adult life essentially homeless, wandering from place to place and offering people the good news of God's salvation. I want to conclude with some quotes from Desmond Tutu, some statements in his writings and sermons. Our book group a couple of years ago read a book that he co-authored called The Book of Joy, which he wrote with the Dalai Lama, another religious leader who similarly lived through tremendous persecution by the Chinese government, and who, like Desmond Tutu, is inhabited by a kind of light and joy. There are people who just radiate love and joy that you meet, and they just have that glow. And both the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu are two such people. So that book is full of gems of how to live a life of joy even in the midst of darkness. Here are some quotes to share from Desmond Tutu. God's dream is that you and I and all of us will realize that we are family, that we are made for togetherness, for goodness, and for compassion. Hope is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. Here's one I particularly like. We may be surprised at the people we find in heaven. God has a soft spot for sinners. His standards are quite low. We are fragile creatures, and it is from this weakness, not despite it, that we discover the possibility of pure joy. Discovering more joy does not, I'm sorry to say, save us from the inevitability of hardships and heartbreaks. In fact, we may cry more easily, but we will laugh more easily too. Perhaps we're just more alive. Yet as we discover more joy, we can face suffering in a way that ennobles rather than embitters. We have hardship without becoming hard. We have heartbreak without being broken. It's hard to imagine a person who more fully lived those words that he preached. Hard to imagine someone who did it better than Desmond Tutu. To live joy in the midst of suffering in a way that ennobles and doesn't embitter. To endure hardship without becoming hard. And heartbreak without becoming broken. I'll leave you with one more thought to begin this new year. You are made for perfection, but you are not yet perfect. You are a masterpiece in the making. You are a masterpiece in the making. As we begin this new year, still mired in so much darkness, may we look to Desmond Tutu. May we look to the faith of those who have gone before us. May we look to the perseverance, the love, and the stick-to-itiveness of Mary and Joseph. And may we always look to the light that shines in the darkness, the light given to us in Jesus the Christ. Amen.